Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Wednesday, September 17th, 2014. With me today, I have I was trying to come up with a good way to describe both of you in one word, and I can't.
Bosses.
Bosses. There we go. We found the word.
One word.
My bosses here today.
We do not need a descriptor in front of that word, though. So we're good. Just leave it as bosses.
Yep, that's all we need right there. Okay, so Brian Chaffin, how are you?
I am doing very well. Thank you for having me.
And thank you for taking the time out of what I know is a crazy busy day for you to be on. And Dave Hamilton, thank you for being here too.
Wait, Dave's here?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
The guy's a jerk, though.
I know.
Yeah,
but we said we weren't gonna offer any of those descriptors, Brian.
Oh, right. Sorry.
Yeah, come on, Brian. This is going to reflect poorly in your evaluation. All right.
Let's do this.
Okay. So I wanted to start off today with a warning for people, because today is the day that iOS 8 is going to be released, and I'm very excited that people are finally going to get to start playing with this. Now, one of the features that you will be asked about during the setup process is whether or not you want to activate iCloud Drive, which turns iCloud into a sort of Dropbox kind of setup for you, which is really
Danger
cool.
Will Robinson.
Yeah, no kidding. When you see that.
Sorry, I figured I'd interrupt to give people the sense of shock and awe that they should feel when they see that warning.
Yes, and very well done. So the deal is, don't enable iCloud Drive. And that's because once you enable it, this is a one-way path. You're now disabling all of the sync functions in regular iCloud for all your devices. So everything has to move to iCloud Drive. So this is an all or nothing thing. And
to be fair, though, if you have only iOS 8 devices, and there's a huge asterisk there because you may think you only have iOS 8 devices, but you have more. If you only have iOS 8 devices, then you are able to do all your syncing with iCloud Drive. However, your Macs do not run iOS 8, and chances are your Macs don't run Yosemite yet either. Right. And that's where you're going to run into issues.
Right. So the caveat being, if your computing world consists of, say, an iPad and an iPhone and nothing else, then iCloud Drive is probably going to be okay for you today. But if you have a Mac in the mix somewhere and you are not running Yosemite on that Mac, which isn't officially available until probably October, then you're going to find that you're suddenly locked out of files that you thought you had access to.
Yeah, it's no good.
That's no good.
But it will be a good thing once you can get your Macs there. And again, you know, this is the kind of thing you got to remember. If you have one older Mac that can't update to Yosemite for whatever reason, you need to think about this, right, when you're making your decision as to whether or not, even once your main Mac, say, updates that way. Or if you're at an office and they won't let you update to Yosemite initially, and sometimes there's good reasons for that. You know, you have to bear all that in mind. This is, yet again, Apple reinventing the way that they're dealing with, you know, their version of the cloud. And cloud is a
seem like there's both inconsistency and inherent risk in that, Dave.
I would add those could be at the top of the list.
Oh,
yeah?
I see.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It's not Apple does not have a good track record with consistency or risk when it comes to the cloud.
But this is fantastic job security for Apple geniuses and independent computer consultants around the world.
Oh, yeah, man. When we bought our first house, it was before we started TMO, and I was doing a lot of consulting, mostly for the Windows world. And I remember turning to Lisa after we, you know, walked in and had this huge mortgage, of course, looming over us. Huge huge at the time.
Everything's relative,
right. But anyway, I turned to her and I said, well, you know, we can thank Microsoft for this house, because if were it not for them, I wouldn't be making any money to buy it.
So, it's true.
Yeah.
Yep. So, hey, thanks, Microsoft.
And thanks, Apple.
And thanks, Apple. And thanks, yeah, Apple. Well, it keeps us, look, here we are.
Exactly. We have jobs.
There we are. That's right. It's no different than it was the day I bought my first house. So there you go. Mm.
There you go. Just a different company behind it.
Well, right. The rising tide raises all ships.
It's true.
There you go. And so now that we have that out of the way, I wanted to take a look at something that you brought up, Brian, when we were chatting before we started recording, which is where the Apple Watch is really going to fit in with the whole watch market.
Yeah, I've had the second piece kicking around in my head since I wrote the first one. And that is the thought that sort of keeps percolating through my head. And depending on when you're listening to this, you're hearing it here before I write it. That's Switzerland ignores the Apple Watch at its peril. That's my titular approach to this.
And I'm kind of inclined to agree with you. It looks to me to be a lot like the scenario that played out when Apple got into the smartphone market, where we had these companies that had been making smartphones for years, dismissing Apple's ability to step into this new market and then disrupt it.
Or the music player market. Who wants to keep a hard drive in their pocket? That's crazy.
That is crazy.
It is crazy again. But there was a period of time where it was the most brilliant idea in the world.
Right.
Yeah, and Apple nailed it at that time.
So part of what was sparking this in my head is an interview at Forbes. Ariel Adams did an interview with Jean-Claude Bivier, who is currently, I think he's he runs the watch division at LVMH, which is an umbrella company that's big in the Swiss watch market. They own a lot of different brands, including Hublot or Hublot, depending on how you want to pronounce that, Tag, and Zenith. Oh, goodness. Which is my watch brand. So that guy, Mr. Bivel, he's not dismissive of the concept of the Apple Watch, but he's dismissive of Apple's first iteration of it. And he's like, you know, when it doesn't need an iPhone, you know, let me know, that sort of thing. And one of his central points is that the Apple Watch does not compare to a fine timepiece like a Patek Philippe or, you know, a Zenith or, you know, any one of the watches that you could spend $10, $20, $30, $40,
$100,000. Mention the brand that everybody knows, Rolex.
Rolex, yes.
Right. That's the one that probably comes to mind for a lot of people when you mention a high-end watch.
Panerai?
Yeah, Panerai had a fun little run there.
Yeah. Omega had a you know, they're always kind of there too.
Right.
Rolex
right.
obviously is the big brand that most folks know. And he's right. He's right. The Apple Watch for most people does not compare to a $20,000 watch. In that the thing about the $20,000 watch is this little machine, you know, it's this little piece of artwork. And the Apple Watch is definitely a different kind of beast, but the problem is that it goes in the same place as the $20,000 piece of art.
You know, I have a couple things to say. You're right? You can't wear both. You could, but I doubt most people are going to choose to wear a mechanical watch on one wrist and an Apple Watch on the other, right? That's possible. But
this is for pretension. This is for functionality.
Right. Yeah. And I don't know which is which yet. So let's leave that out there. You say that this is a little machine. People may not realize. People that don't own or aren't interested in high-end watches may not realize that most of these high-end watches that we're talking about, the Rolexes, the Patek Philippes, the Panerais, and most of them, not all, but most of those are not your typical quartz watch. They don't have a battery in them. They are mechanical movements inside. Some of them are hand wound and you have to wind them, you know, regularly. Otherwise they stop running. And many of them are automatic, which means that they have a little weight in there that spins around, and it's enough to wind up the spring as you're moving around during the day, and your watch just runs forever. It needs to be maintained, you know, once or twice a decade, and that maintenance can cost you a small fortune. But that's how that works. So when Brian says there's this little machine and a piece of art, that's what you mean, is there's this mechanical piece of art. And I like mechanical watches because they're the one thing that they're the one gadget that I get to wear and or have with me that does not rely on a battery and yet is still this really complex thing, right?
And it also is the one gadget you have that maintains or increases its value over time.
Well, that depends. You know,
it does depend.
My cheap little Sterling that I buy or you know, the Invictus, right? Invictus got a ton of mechanical watches and they're actually pretty well made. They've got Chinese movements in them and it's great. But they're not going to increase in value over time.
Correct.
You're going to buy that for somewhere between 50 and maybe $500, and it's going to go down.
Fine watch market starts at $2,500.
That's right. Yeah.
It goes from 25 to 5 and up.
Right. Right. And so, yes, those typically do increase in value over time. You can expect to get back what you paid for the watch. Again, it's a used watch now that you're selling it, but you can expect to get back what you paid for it in probably 3 to 5 years. That happens pretty quickly because
you get the initial decrease.
Right, right. But after that, it's just all gravy. Most people don't sell them, but a lot of people do. But you know, you mentioned, Brian, that it goes in the same place as a Patek Philippe. But here's the thing, or a Rolex or anything like that, and it does. But it doesn't take the place of it. It does something a whole lot more, potentially. I mean, we're projecting a little bit. We know some from Apple about what this watch is going to do. We know that that's not the whole story.
But what we know already.
Already, correct.
It says that the Apple Watch does a lot more than a fine timepiece.
It does.
Even your most complicated watch, and you know, your perpetuals, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah.
It does far more than any mechanical watch or even any quartz watch or any digital watch, period.
Right. And that's sort of the thing. If you know, if I choose to buy, and I like mechanical watches, I have tons of them. I say tons. I've got a handful of them. And again, a lot of them are cheap. I've got a Rolex that was not cheap. It's actually worth a lot more today than I paid for it 7 years ago or something, which is great. But for the most part, I've spent $500 or less on any watch. And two of the watches that I wear pretty regularly, an Invicta and a Sterling, are less than $100, right? And they're mechanical movements and they keep good time. But that the point is, I have a bunch of watches. I like to mix and match. I like to wear different ones on different days just because I like all the different mechanics. I enjoy keeping them all running, which means keeping some of them on a winder, but I don't have enough winder space at the moment. So, you know, if anybody wants to get me a birthday gift, there we go. You know, it's in my Amazon wish list and will be forever because I'll never buy it because I just keep winding them, right? But, hey, my birthday's next week, you know.
It's good, it is.
Right? So there you go. Anyway, but I like that. If I were to get an Apple Watch, and I think this is true of everyone, and buy into all the stuff that it does for me, the fitness tracking.
That's the key.
Right.
Buying into it.
You got to buy in. Right. Fitness tracking and the communication and the NFC and all of the stuff that it does, in addition to, of course, being an easy way to look at my wrist and see what time it is. If I do that, I will never want to wear any of my other watches. It doesn't matter, right? They will all be useless to me.
Yes.
Because I won't want to wear them. Maybe I'm going out to dinner. I'll put on the Rolex, but maybe the Rolex will sit for 4 or 5 months and I'll sell the stupid thing, right? If I buy into the Apple thing. But this is a major mind shift that changes how I've thought since I was a kid. It's interesting.
The thing though is that there is still no comparison, and not even necessarily because one is inherently better than the other, but there's no comparison between the Apple Watch and a $20,000 or $100,000 timepiece, or probably a $5,000 timepiece. But they both go in the same place. And if you buy into the Apple Watch, you're going to buy into the Apple Watch. And I don't know how many people are actually going to turn around and sell their Patek Philippe or their Rolex. They'll probably still keep that just because they can't bear to get rid of it. Some people will, some people won't, I guess. Yeah. But
I would ask my son. I mean, if I really truly buy into the Apple Watch thing, I'd probably keep it for a couple of years just to make sure that I don't lose interest in the Apple Watch thing.
Yep.
Right? And then at that point, I would ask my son or my daughter if, you know, they wanted it passed down to them, and if they didn't, I'd sell it.
Fair enough. And so it's gonna be a little bit subjective for everybody.
For everybody, right? That would be my path. Exactly.
Here's where I think it's gonna have the real effect, the real immediate effect on the Swiss watch industry, and that's that once the Patek Philippe owner buys into the Apple Watch, he's not gonna turn around and also buy a new Blow and a a Zenith and a Rolex and and another Patek, which a lot of watch people do.
Correct. It's a habit.
It does become a habit.
All right.
Yeah, so you watch shopping is something I do all the time. Yeah. Even though I don't buy all the time.
Okay. Sorry. So as a non-watch wearer, I am for the first time in my life seriously looking at a several hundred dollar watch purchase when the Apple Watch comes out. So for people like me that the most we've ever considered spending before is like $30 or $40 on a watch. Do you see this as a potential opening into the higher end watch market for people that previously would not have considered it? Meaning, like, let's say I get an Apple Watch. Do you see any likelihood that someone that's never been in the watch market would consider buying other watches?
There is no doubt that the Apple Watch is going to get more people wearing things on the wrist.
Yeah.
But I don't see a lot of Apple Watch users graduating to a real mechanical timepiece.
No, that's...
It doesn't even apply.
Yeah, so, this is so my issue. It's a one-way path, and there's only one step on this path. No watch, Apple Watch, done.
And here's the issue, right? Apple has to either convince you, someone who doesn't wear a watch, to now start wearing one, right? You're one potential target market. You represent that. They have to convince you to start wearing a watch. They have to convince me to
stop wearing a watch
and wear their thing instead. So that's, you know, a tough sell. I don't know who is the person that is the obvious, aha, finally, you know, the Apple Watch is just day one. I'm definitely going to get it. I have yet to figure out who that person is. I think everybody has to go through this process of which way do I go with this? Because I'm not there yet. I mean, I talked in theory about this. And I'll let you go, Brian, in one second.
Of course.
Temper that by the fact that those users, that's not the world that gets to decide that. It is iPhone 5 and later users that fit into those two categories now need to make that decision.
That is actually an excellent point.
Yeah, that's why I interrupted you.
The mechanical watch industry is not going to be killed by this, but I do think that the mechanical watch industry is going to end up seeing some pressure put on it, and it's a pressure that they can't meet. Either the Apple Watch is a failure, or the Apple Watch puts pressure on them and takes sales away. Right. But the thing is that the core of the industry will survive. The strongest brands will survive. The best brands will survive. And then when Apple eventually kills the iWatch, which it will, it'll no doubt be Apple that ends up coming in with the next paradigm that obviates its own smash hit.
Right.
When that happens,
just like they did with the iPod.
Just like they did with the iPod, absolutely. And when that happens, the mechanical watch industry will still be there and will continue to make watches that are less efficient, less accurate than the cheapest quartz watch on the market.
But are still very beautiful.
Right.
Yeah, that are still gorgeous and beautiful and lovely and wonderful. So there's probably a shelf life on a lot of this stuff. There's going to be some other wearable thing that at some points replaces the Apple Watch. And the Swiss industry will still be there, just like it was still there after the quartz revolution destroyed it in the early 70s.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think we have to end on that note because we are out of time. So thanks both of you for joining me today. And thanks for enlightening me a little more on just how Apple Watch fits in with the whole high-end watch. I hate to use the word paradigm, but I will anyhow. Paradigm.
And Apple may well be selling a high-end watch. We don't know the price of that gold one.
Yeah, true, but we don't. So should we talk about that the next time, Dave?
Sure.
Cool. I can't wait.